Hi, this is Debbie Levine. I'm here today with Dr. Michael Lev to talk about our second volume of Radiology Select that's entitled Stroke. Dr. Lev is an associate professor at Massachusetts General Hospital and Harvard Medical School. At MGH, he's the director of emergency neuroradiology and the radiology neurovascular lab. And he was also our original neuroradiology deputy editor for the journal Radiology. So when we were thinking about who would be a good editor for this Radiology Select series, Michael, of course, came to mind. So Dr. Lev, thank you so much for putting together this volume and for being here for this podcast.
My pleasure.
So can you tell me how you thought about this volume and how you decided to structure it?
Sure. Stroke is an important disease. There's over 750,000 strokes a year in the U.S. alone. This is probably going to go up to 1 million by 2050, and a very large proportion of these have major morbidity, mortality, and cost. So with that in mind, we broke up this volume into three broad topic headings based on the most important and clinically relevant past, current, and probably future trends in stroke imaging. In addition, we have a brief section on some notable pediatric considerations, which is really a different category from adult stroke. And specifically, the three broad categories are advanced CT considerations, MRI penumbral markers for outcome prediction and patient selection, and novel markers for carotid artery vulnerable plaque and stroke risk. And in that first category, advanced CT considerations, that includes the role of dual energy imaging, the role of CTA, and the role of CT perfusion multimodality imaging. Under MR penumbral markers, there's been a lot of literature lately on the role of diffusion perfusion, DWI and PWI mismatch for therapeutic triage, and also using other techniques that don't require intravenous contrast, such as arterial spin labeling and other markers for physiological penumbral imaging. And finally, we talk a bit about ultrasound and MRA screening for vulnerable internal carotid artery plaque, a little bit about catheter arteriography, and some broader cost effectiveness and societal issues involved in screening patients for their stroke risk.
That sounds wonderful. And there's such a large volume of literature on stroke. How did you narrow these topics down?
Well, the topics we chose are largely those that have been on the cutting edge of stroke imaging research, not only with regard to high-impact clinical management issues, but also items that are on the to-do lists for major national and international funding priorities from governments, foundations, and industry grant agencies. And what's interesting about this is that you could really go back over the pages of radiology to before the start of the CT era, and it's really sobering to reflect that historically, prior to 1973, when Hounsfield invented CT scanning and it was disseminated by the company EMI, the only way to evaluate stroke was really through either air contrast myelography or direct carotid puncture using catheter arteriography, because we're really talking about pre-Seldinger technique era. So since 1973, radiology has continued to be at the forefront in reporting the important trends in and evolution of these increasingly advanced non-invasive physiological mechanistic imaging techniques, which have literally redefined the clinical management of stroke patients. And these considerations have become especially critical in recent years due to the advent of effective but potentially risky therapies such as IV thrombolysis and endovascular treatments. And these treatments have really necessitated the need for careful patient selection, and imaging has had the primary role in that. In addition to patient selection for novel stroke therapies, other important goals of this state-of-the-art advanced stroke imaging that we talk about are in stroke prevention through screening for risk factors such as carotid occlusive disease or cardiac lesions, in differential diagnosis for distinguishing true stroke or TIA from hypo or hyperglycemia, from seizures or from other stroke mimics, and also in general patient management, prognosis, and in the future, these type of imaging techniques may even be important in rehabilitation guidance.
Thank you. That's a very complete answer to that question. And can you give us some examples of how advanced imaging techniques can help address these goals in stroke and stroke-prone patients?
Sure. Just to put some of it in context, for example, coming back to the issue of IV thrombolysis, because ruling out hemorrhage is the only absolute imaging contraindication to FDA-approved IV thrombolysis, which must be given within 3 to 4.5 hours of stroke onset, you really don't want the imaging to slow things down. And so a simple unenhanced CT actually remains the standard of care for ruling out hemorrhage before giving IV thrombolysis. With a dual energy CT scan, however, you can get an unenhanced scan, and you could also distinguish hemorrhage from calcification and even from residual iodine if that had been present from a prior study. Another important role of advanced stroke imaging is the role of CTA and DWI, even in TIA, in transient ischemic attack. And just as an example, if you were to go into the emergency room for chest pain and they gave you 30 mLs of an antacid and your chest pain went away, you still wouldn't be sent home until you had serial EKGs, serial cardiac enzymes, and several of hours of observation, because the risk-to-benefit ratio of missing even a low-probability heart attack is very high. Patients could die. And the same is true of TIA. There's no such thing as just a transient ischemic attack and let the patient follow up in a few days. Less than 5% of all stroke patients who arrive in the ED are candidates for IV thrombolysis, and a TIA is our chance to prevent a devastating stroke. So that when a patient comes into the ED with a TIA, vascular imaging, ideally a CTA, but screening with MRA or even ultrasound would be okay. Vascular imaging should be performed as soon as possible, and certainly within 24 hours. And even a punctate lesion on a TIA patient showing restricted diffusion in the setting of a TIA actually redefines that to be a stroke in progress, and that necessitates urgent care. Another example is the whole topic of perfusion imaging. And there has been an enormous amount of confusion on that in the literature. I think radiology has really been in the forefront of helping to sort out the strengths and weaknesses of this technique, its indications, and especially the need for greater standardization and validation of CT and MR perfusion both. This is something that we really deal with in this volume. And finally, just another example is that with some of this advanced imaging, gadolinium or CT contrast is required. And in many patients with GFR issues or allergies, especially in elderly stroke patients, that's contraindicated. And so in the volume, we have a number of papers that address other methods of doing advanced physiological type imaging without contrast, such as arterial spin labeling, other markers of potentially at-risk tissues, such as increased flare signal intensity. And rather than go on here, I think I'll stop and let people read the book.
Well, Michael, thank you so much again for your expertise and your enthusiasm in not only preparing this volume, but selecting the articles that we put together for the CME and SAMS, and of course, for talking with me today in this podcast. Your time's very much appreciated.
Great. Well, thank you, and thank you to the whole Radiology Editorial Board. I'm happy to have this opportunity to share this important information, so thank you.